Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Tuesday Night Jaw on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, your host, Jim Smallman. Now, before we get into the usual plugs and me telling you what this podcast is about, just a little reminder. Saturday, September the 9th, right before the huge Alexandra Palace Progress show on September the 10th. So at noon on September the 9th in London, King's Place in London, there's the London Podcast Festival. I am doing a live Tuesday Night Jaw roundtable slash list episode with a load of special guests that I can't quite reveal yet. Noon, September the 9th. Come and get tickets. About a quarter of them have gone so far. It would be brilliant if we could sell this place out. I've got a big old room and I'd really like to fill it. If you've enjoyed getting this podcast for nout and you've had a laugh with us, then come to this because it really helps support the podcast and we'll make it absolutely tremendous. The live one we did after Progress was great. We will make this one even better. It's gonna rule. Trust me on this. There's more information about what we're going to do with the show and how to get tickets. You can get them in two ways. You can go to my website, jimsmallman.com/TNJ. That's where you can point people at this podcast in general. But also on there's a link at the top of the page for you to buy tickets. That link, if you want it just direct now, is kingsplace.co.uk/TNJ live. Okay? kingsplace.co.uk/TNJ live or jimsmallman.com/TNJ, lowercase. It'd be great to see some of you there. I will high five you guys. There'll probably be merch there. We'll have a great time for like 90 minutes. We're all going to hang out in London. I'm not doing anything until the 10th. So please come to it. Please tell someone you know who may want to come along to it and listen to me and some special guests talking about wrestling and having a laugh and making puns and generally being daft. It would be brilliant if people could come to it. So once again, kingsplace.co.uk/TNJ live or jimsmallman.com/TNJ. Plug ends. There'll probably be more plugs for it in a while. I really, really, really want this to work out and it'd be great if you guys could come along. Okay, before we get to what we're doing today, the other plugs, the Distraction Pieces Network. Check out everything on the network, because it's all dead good. Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces podcast, Hardcore Listing, Say Why to Drugs, the Stop and Search podcast. I'm super proud to be part of that family of podcasts. It means a lot to me that Pip's had me on the network with loads of other great stuff. So please support those other podcasts. My wrestling company, ProgressWrestling.com. Today, I think we had 19 tickets left this afternoon for Alexandra Palace. That's a 2,000 capacity show that we've announced one match for. So, you know, if you're thinking, oh, maybe I'll get a ticket now, because they're going to be gone. This time next week, I'm not going to need to plug Alexandra Palace, I don't think. Okay, so ProgressWrestling.com for tickets for that. Also for our merch, because we've got loads of new merch out, and for tickets for our show in New York City on August the 12th. Boston, I've not had a chance to plug it on this because it's sold out. We sold like 300 tickets in half an hour for a show in the United States, which is crazy. But yeah, New York City, August 12th. Please come. I'd be delighted to see you there. The high five rule, if you see me at anything, stand up, wrestling, anywhere. If you listen to Tuesday Night Jaw, you walk up and high five me. You don't need to explain it. Just hold your hand out, I'll high five you. I'll know that you listen to this. you got good taste in podcasts. Good on you. So that's progresswrestling.com for that. If you want to watch all the Progress shows, demand-progress.com cost you about £5 a month. It's probably a little bit more than that because of exchange rates at the minute. But, you know, demand-progress.com for all of our shows, including our last show we did, which was in Birmingham on July the 9th. It was a great show. Go and see it because I'm really proud of it. We've got a show in Manchester this week. If you come into that, high five me if you see me. You'll probably see me, I'm the ring announcer. But yeah, feel free to high five me. Feel free to come and talk to me about Tuesday night, your progress, whatever. I'm a pretty friendly dude. That's why I want people to come to this live podcast, so I can just hang out with like 400 of my friends. That's the goal. So yeah, do please come to that. The final thing I want to plug is just this podcast. If you already like it, that's awesome. Please tell some more people that you like it. That's super awesome. Please rate and review and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. Tremendous. Please point people at jimsmorman.com/TNJ because that's got a list of all the shows that we've done and all the various ways that you can subscribe, be it through iTunes or Acast or through whatever podcast app that we can hopefully find to get you on board with. So yeah, and also me on Twitter, @JimSmorman. Dead easy, that, isn't it? @JimSmorman. And if you're going to talk to me about wrestling, #TuesdayNightJaw. I'm quite tired. I must just say this before we start. I've done a lot of Tuesday Night Jaw Meets episodes recently. A lot of people have said, why aren't you doing the roundtables? Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, the roundtables require me going to London or Manchester, and I have not had the time recently. You're probably aware I went to America for some time. And I've had a load of gigs, and I have a baby, and this week my daughter is visiting, because I get my daughter for some time during the summer holidays. My daughter is nearly 14 now. So today there is a show. It's not a Tuesday Night Jaw Meets episode. It's not a round table or anything like that. But it's just one of the list ones. And that's cool, because the live one we're going to do, when you go and read about the live one we're doing on September the 9th, there's going to be an element of listy stuff in there, but an element of round table, an element of what we did for the live show. So it's going to be all over the place. But I was thinking about something today. And it's to do with heels. Now, I want to do a top 10 list. Now, I'm not just going to do my top 10 heels, because that's quite a difficult thing. Some people will be a heel in wrestling for their entire career. Some people will be a heel for a significant portion of their career. Some for just, you know, a year or so. The thing is, what I want to talk about is my favourite heel runs. So some of them could have been over the course of a few years. Some of them could have been over the course of a few months. But my favourite, when I've got the most visceral reaction out of a heel wrestler for his actions. So it's not just the heel wrestler that I'm naming, but it's also the storylines they were involved in, the period of time it was, and all that sort of stuff. So I wanted to come up with my 10 favourite heel runs. Now, normally I put rules on these things. Now, because these are whole swathes of time, I don't think we can limit it by show or promotion or anything like that. I mean, I've only named each wrestler once in terms of them being the heel that I am nominating. So that goes without saying. You can't just have 10 favourite Ric Flair heel runs. Although you could probably pick 10 favourite Ric Flair heel runs. So I'm not just doing that. The other thing is, now obviously I am a wrestling promoter. I am super proud of Progress Wrestling. I happen to think that two of the finest heel runs ever in wrestling, and I'm biased, it's my company, feel free to yell at whatever you're listening to me in at the minute, I'm fine with that, but I think Jimmy Havoc heel run as Progress champion is one of the best heel runs in wrestling history, and I think that the current Pete Dunne heel run has the capability to be one of the best heel runs in wrestling history, and I'm biased, my company. But what I've decided to do for this list is not include anyone from Progress. Because if I did, yeah, Jimmy would certainly be very near the top. So I'm heavily involved in it as being part of the creative in Progress. So I don't feel I can choose stuff there because it's like nominating. It's not nominating myself, but it's nominating some of my work. Because, you know, I'm not the character. But, you know, when Jimmy was on the other week and you guys reacted really strongly to the great chat that we had, you know, people are aware that when Jimmy did his stellar work for Progress as heel champion and really helped put us on the map. You know, I was involved in that because we can talk about it now. But it wasn't me out there doing the cool stuff. But, you know, there was elements of it that were down to myself and to John and to Glenn. So I don't really think I can choose Progress wrestlers for this. But, you know, we've had some great heels, not just Jimmy and not just Pete currently. Obviously, the rest of British Strong Style, Marty Skrull as the villain, Nathan Cruz, our first ever champion. You know, there's been loads of great stuff, loads of great heels in there. Zach Gibson's always been a great heel. So, you know, but these are my top 10 favourite ever heel runs. Okay, you'll get into the swing of how this all works as I go through it. And it's not going to be a mega episode this week because, to be honest, I'm having a bit of a week off. Loads of wrestling in July. Loads and loads of wrestling in July. And then go to America for more stuff in August. So it's been a busy time. I've got some great interviews lined up for more Tuesday Night Jaw Meets episodes. So they're all going to be coming up. We will do a SummerSlam roundtable as well. I don't know when, because I'm going to be in America during that time. But we'll find a way for all that stuff to happen. So it's a slightly shorter episode this week. But I always like to put something out. Just a little tip, right? I'm a really busy dude. And I love you guys. Genuinely, right? Properly love you. You support this podcast and it's awesome. Super, super, super awesome. But just a little tip. Some days, if I don't put a podcast out, like, I genuinely get a dozen tweets from people going, "Where's Tuesday Night Jaw?" I'm a busy dude. I've got a life outside of wrestling and outside of podcasting. So, you know, you'll get one. I try to put one up every week. I will tweet if I'm not putting one up for some reason. But, you know, and I'm not annoyed. But, you know, you don't have to tweet me to say, "Where is it?" It'll happen. It'll drop. If you subscribe, it'll automatically drop into your podcast app. So you don't need to hassle me for it. I'm nearly always planning something or trying to put something up. I will tell you in advance if there's not one going up, because I don't like leaving you without one, but there's nearly always one coming. Sometimes they go up at like midnight on Monday. Sometimes they go up at 9 a.m. on a Wednesday, but they're nearly always there. So, you know, I don't want anyone to think that I'm annoyed with them, but I honestly have had like 15 tweets today saying, "Where's Tuesday Night Jaw?" And I've just been hanging out with my family. So they are coming, okay? These things take some work and take some time, and I have to find a little window in my schedule to do them. So, you know, I love doing them, and I love your support. But, no one's been super rude about it. Someone was super rude to me yesterday because PivotShare, the host, Demand Progress went down. And it went down for every wrestling company that's on there. You know, we're not just on there. ICW on there, RevPro on there, and so on. CZW, various other companies. And I had someone... this was the exact words of the tweet. The tweet's been deleted now, but this was the exact words of the tweet that someone sent me. Now, bearing in mind, if someone tweets me and says, "Demand Progress is down," I will say, "You need to tweet PivotShare, because we don't have a computer with all that stuff on. John edits our videos and sends them off to PivotShare, and they host them. That's how it works." So they run it. And if you come to me or the Progress account, and sometimes that's me looking after it, sometimes it's John, and you say, "Oh, it's down," I'll say, "Oh, sorry about that. You need to tweet PivotShare's help platform that they have on Twitter." That's what I normally do. Normally do it with a smile on my face, because that's how most people talk to me. When I'm bringing up this thing about people saying, "Where's the podcast this week?" Most people, 99% of people, are super nice about it, and just it's because they want to listen to it, and I really appreciate it. But it's coming, okay? Whereas this PivotShare thing being down, someone genuinely tweeted me. This was the exact words of their tweet that just said, "Demand Progress is down. Sort it out, Jim Smallman." First of all, it's not. I don't sort of, like, if it's down, we can send an email and we can ask, but we can only do the same as you can. It's not our service; it's PivotShare's service. They host it. And you might not be aware of that, and that's fine. But what do you think I'm going to do? Do you think I'm going to get out? If, let's say, I'm looking after my son that morning, I'm not going to get on my hands and knees and with a spanner and fix the internet. That's not how it works, you know. So it's a weird... it's the same thing I've started getting with people wanting to see certain wrestlers in Progress and tagging me in tweets to that wrestler, just saying... "Oi, Jim Smallman, get this guy booked." Again, I've never booked a single person because someone's asked me to do it on Twitter. So, you know, This is just, I don't know why I've gone into Twitter etiquette mode, because I love you guys. And again, 99% of people who tweet me are super respectful. But, you know, just you know, sometimes just maybe ask me how my day's going, because I'm quite tired. I've been working really, really hard. And this week's kind of a week off. So that's probably why it's got to me a bit more than normal. Anyway, rant over. Let's get to this list. And as always, you want to play along with the list. Write yours out in your notes on your phone is probably the easiest. Then screenshot it and then tweet it to me, at Jim Smallman. They're the sorts of tweets I like getting. Not, oi, do this. I like tweets where people come to me and go, hey, Jim, what about this? I did one with music the other day. And I got so many cool responses, and it was a really cool way of me just sitting on my sofa, chilling out, just going, oh, this person's into this music. I love that kind of interaction. That's the sort of shit that I want to use Twitter for. And you know me, if you tweet me, I'm nearly always polite to you, okay? So, you know, that's the way I am. But the last few weeks, I've had a lot of tweets from people who are being just a little bit too much demanding. So, you know, again, if you ask for this podcast, that's not too demanding. But, you know, do bear in mind it's always coming, I assure you. There's no reason I'm going to stop doing this now. I've put far too much time and effort into it. And I like watching the listener figures go up. It's pretty sweet. Right, to my list. My 10 favourite heel runs of all time. Here we go. At number 10. This started in December 2009, ended in December 2010. Exactly, well, pretty much a year from the start of the angle to the end of the angle. And this is, and you've probably heard me mention it a few times on the podcast before, Kevin Steen and his obsession with El Generico and destroying him. They were tag team partners for a good couple of years in Ring of Honor, where the bulk of this feud was. They did feud in other promotions. I've mentioned their feud in PWG before. One of my favourite indie matches is Kevin Steen, El Generico in PWG from Steenwolf. But their whole storyline in Ring of Honor, from December 2009, December 2010. Kevin Steen turns on El Generico after a tag team match, ends a year later in a fight without honour, an unsanctioned match. I normally hate the notion of unsanctioned matches because they're still appearing with cameras rolling, but I'll allow it here. I have no doubt that this is the feud that took them both to WWE, but this is about heel runs. And this was the beginning of Kevin Steen, who, if you watch him, even his early days in the indies, could do it all. This was the thing that took him from being an interesting dude who did cool indie stuff to being a proper, proper heel. Someone that was just a dick. And that year-long feud with El Generico and Ring of Honor is just... it's wonderful seeing his work, because he comes out of himself. He goes from, you look at photos of Kevin Steen before he became Kevin Owens, and he was on the indies and he's an unassuming indie looking dude. But this was the thing that really, really elevated him. There's something about Kevin Steen, Kevin Owens now rather, who, where he just has that, even if you wanted, this is why I'd promote this whole, if you really like a heel, then make sure you boo him, because he deserves being booed. Just the smallest things he does in WWE now come from the great grounding he had from having that year-long run. Because he wasn't particularly heelish until that. He'd been a heel in various places, but that was the point where he went from just a dude in a tag team to super, super, duper mega heel. And that one year gave us everything, all the little nuances that Kevin Owens has now came from when he was Kevin Steen, and he was feuding with El Generico, who obviously isn't wrestling anymore because he runs an orphanage in Mexico. He does. Love it. Absolutely love it. I think it's a great sign of how good someone's heel work is and how good a feud is when it moves to other promotions. So I mentioned it going to PWG and it aired in various other places as well, and just tremendous, tremendous stuff. A lot of people put down the fact that those guys had such good rivalry and such good matches because they were friends. That is completely true, but it also is down to the fact that Kevin Steen was tremendous as a heel, and that's what this list is about. Great heel runs. He was tremendous as a heel, and El Generico was tremendous as a babyface. Absolutely brilliant. Right, next up. It's a WWE. This is one that's quite easy to seek out using your network subscription. Chris Jericho. Now, I'm one of those people who, Chris Jericho, when he debuted in WWE with the whole Y2J gimmick, obviously when he debuted in WWE, he got a very positive reaction, and he went from heel to babyface quite a lot in his initial time in WWE. In WCW, he was meant to be, he was certainly a very good heel, certainly he was doing the thing with the masks and stuff like that. But there was the comedy there that always made him popular. No matter how much he did to make him, to make himself hated, they would always do stuff that would still make him popular because he was cool. You know, think about it. You know, he looked cool, and he said cool stuff, and he said quotable stuff, and that kind of makes you start getting cheered, and someone else we'll talk about a bit later on. So, I've written in my notes here, this is how to be a proper heel. So Chris Jericho, this is in 2008, had already been feuding a little bit with Shawn Michaels. They'd had a match previous to the bit that really kicks off this heel run for me. They'd had a match where they shook hands at the end, which Jericho had initiated the handshake, and people were cheering Michaels, even though Michaels was acting like a proper heel. He was faking injuries and you know, generally being a dick. So we get a highlight reel episode in June 2008, an episode of Raw. And Chris Jericho pointed all this stuff out very calmly to Shawn Michaels and then snapped and rammed his head through a television screen. Injured Shawn Michaels' eye, and this feud was off and running. Now, when this feud started, I did not think that nearly 10 years later I'd still be holding this feud up. It felt like something for two guys who are big stars but weren't necessarily going to be pushed for the title at that point. It felt like something for them to do, and what it became was a tremendous feud. It was the Wrestling Observer's feud of the year in 2008. And again, it's not about favourite feuds, it's about favourite heel runs. And what's brilliant about Jericho on this run is, and he kept it up, it wasn't just for the Michaels thing, but he was trying to take away everything that would give you a reason to cheer him, to make himself a proper heel. Now, it's hard to do in today's day and age because there's always going to be smart fans who want to cheer the bad guy. It happens all the time. At our show in Birmingham the other week, there were three or four fans who absolutely vociferously disliked everybody who was popular. And indie wrestling is, you know, more difficult. We don't have as, you know, clearly defined heels and faces, but progress, we try to. And there was three or four people who were definitely cheering for, in quotation marks, the wrong people. What Chris Jericho tried to do during this run was take away everything that fans found cool about him. So he stopped with the catchphrases. He started looking like he had more disdain for people. He started wearing suits. He was basing a lot of his characterization on bad guys in movies, rather than trying to be the Ayatollah of rock and roller. Everything, he was more calculated in the ring. It was tremendous. And it includes one of the most shocking moments when I've been watching wrestling, and that's at SummerSlam in 2008, when Jericho goes to punch Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels ducks, and Jericho just levels Shawn Michaels' wife. At the time, I'm watching that just going, oh, that's too far. And partly because Shawn Michaels' wife's not a wrestler, but it's such a powerful, powerful sort of thing to have happen. It genuinely, Jericho's whole demeanour and whole behaviour during, you know, those sort of 6 months of the year, where he became WWE champion again. He was so over as a heel, he became WWE champion again. And, you know, that wasn't something that I necessarily saw coming. Completely deserved. Brilliant, brilliant run at the time. Well, that's number nine. Number eight. A little bit biased. He's a mate, I suppose. But I love this. And it's William Regal. In 2007, up until him winning the King of the Ring in 2008. Which, for the record, is my favourite ending shot of a show ever. ever is Regal just celebrating, just looking disdainfully at everybody after he's won the King of the Ring. Back to that in a second. So Regal won his way to becoming the Raw General Manager in autumn 2007, and he then proceeded to do some quite clever and underhanded things to establish himself as a proper full-on villain, because he had done slightly more comedic stuff before that as well. So this is during the course of Ric Flair having his, if he was pinned or submitted, he would have to retire. So he's doing that whole career-ending storyline. One of the Raws at the end of December, I think, in 2007, Regal speaks to Triple H and says, "You're facing Ric Flair. Oh, and by the way, if you don't beat him, your slot in the Royal Rumble is on the line." Just so he wouldn't give his hero and his friend an easy ride. Little Machiavellian things like that, really, really subtle. So then that's clever enough. Then Regal interferes in the match by putting brass knuckles on and punching Triple H in the face to get Flair the win by disqualification. It's so smart, and then leads into a little miniature sort of literally blood feud between Regal and Triple H. We had a great first blood match on Raw, but when those things sort of happened, it was just really, really good. And then this all adds to Regal's character, brings him up, takes away from any sort of comedic stuff he might have done in the previous years to that, and just gives him something really, really cool to focus on. And then he wins King of the Ring, first person to make CM Punk submit in WWE during the course of that in the final. That King of the Ring tournament, it's not necessarily the best King of the Ring tournament, but just the look on Regal's face as he's won at the end, and everything fades to black like the end of The Sopranos, and no one knows what's going to happen next, is brilliant. Now, the sadness in this, in that, weirdly, I spoke to Regal about this a little while ago, in that I would love to have known what would have happened next, but obviously there was a wellness violation, and Mr. Regal got suspended for a little while, and then we don't know what would have happened. It might have played out as it did, and I know that people have asked him this on live shows, and he's like, well, these things happen. But he's my friend, and if it meant there was a chance he would have won the world title, heel William Regal as world champion in 2008-2009, oh, how cool would that have been? As it stands, those few months from late 2007, early 2008, still really, really cool for me, and still show. There's loads of different aspects of William Regal that you can remember. You can remember him being a blue blood in WCW. You can remember him doing the comedic stuff with Tajiri and whatever. Or, you can see him being really serious and a proper ass kicker, which he was during that time. That's why it's such a great run. Underappreciated, I feel. Okay, number 7 is a much more well-known one. And this is The Rock. The Rock's heel run in 1998. So, what I mentioned before with Chris Jericho is, if someone's saying cool stuff all the time and catchphrases and whatever, eventually they will get popular. And The Rock, towards the end of the Nation of Domination, was starting to get cheered. Nation breaks up, The Rock's on his own, he's starting to get cheered. Positioned going into Survivor Series in 1998 as a babyface, going up against Vince McMahon, going up against the corporation, and trying to win the WWE title, which was vacated, trying to win that and keep it away from the McMahons. That's what he's there for. Mankind's in the tournament as a kind of unwilling, slightly simple puppet of the McMahons. And The Rock goes through the tournament. It's brilliant. And it's only when you watch him again in hindsight and you're like, oh, I should have seen this coming. The Rock turns. The Rock turns on Mankind. So basically, it's a kind of a double turn at the end of the Survivor Series match. There's a hark back to the Montreal Screwjob as well. It's just everything about it's so good, so good. And I think this is The Rock's best villain work as part of the corporation. His feud with Mick Foley. That tournament finale, like, I know it's obvious if you know a bit about wrestling, you look at it and go, oh, you probably should have seen it coming, but at the time, legit didn't. I remember watching it and being absolutely agog that it had happened. And obviously because this happened, it gave us Mick Foley's title runs that he got, which I'm delighted he got because he deserved them. It managed to make a massive, massive babyface star out of Mick Foley because he had someone to feud with in The Rock. And obviously it led to huge business between Steve Austin and The Rock at WrestleMania. The Rock in that, it's so difficult to boo The Rock. But at that point, as in being a proper corporate shill, he was tremendous at it. And those few months are just brilliant. By the time Backlash 1999 comes around, WWE rightly recognised that he was starting to get cheered again. So that's when the change happened and Shane McMahon turned on him, etc. But still, that initial turn, because he was built up so much as a babyface, just to have it snatched away from you straight away. Oh, quality work. Okay, number six on my favourite heel runs. This is a whole stable. And this is from 1997. It's the Hart Foundation's anti-USA shtick. Now, I love this entire run because it's also the fact that it's bookended with something legendary in the world of wrestling. But I mean, it's bookended either side. So, I mean, admittedly, this is only a brilliant heel run if you're not Canadian. So if you are Canadian, fuzz. But I think you probably appreciate it just as well. So this all begins WrestleMania 13, one of the best matches of all time, the double turn match between Bret Hart and Steve Austin. Fans had wanted to boo Bret Hart for a little bit, and they'd wanted to cheer Steve Austin for a little bit, but this is the point where it got cemented. Bret Hart then starts going on to Raw and being basically a whiny little bitch about everything. He then starts hyping up and playing off the fact that he's Canadian, and then gets joined with his friends and family. So his brother Owen, his brother-in-law, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, Brian Pillman, the British Bulldog. Great segments on television, a great array of talent. Like, genuinely, I know people will go, the Anvil's probably bringing it down a bit. Yeah, but for me, I'd grown up watching the Hart Foundation tag team, so the Anvil needed to be in it. Absolutely brilliant sort of segments they did on TV. One of the best 10-man tag team matches you'll ever see at Canadian Stampede in 1997, which is just ludicrous. Admittedly, it's in Canada, and it's really weird watching that because they're getting a babyface reaction, but you're watching it knowing, and they're resting as heels, and you're watching it knowing that they're heels. And it's such an odd dynamic, and very brave of WWE to do at the time, because WWE will have known that fans are watching that, and the reaction on the screen would be cheering, but the reaction at home would be, hey, fuck these guys. It's such a smart angle. And obviously then on the other end of it, it's bookended, and this makes it even more legendary, I think, as a heel run for Bret and his buddies. It's bookended at the other end with the Montreal Screwjob. So it's just so much stuff packed into those few months. And Bret Hart, when I was a kid, Bret Hart was the most popular wrestler. To have him be that much of a tool was just great. And again, look at the talent involved in that stable as well, and the people they were feuding with at the time. You know, it was, what a run. What a great run.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Before we get into the top five, just a little quick plug once again. September the 9th at noon, the London Podcast Festival at King's Place in London. I am doing a live Tuesday night draw. Special guests will be there. I'll start announcing them soon, I would imagine. We will be doing a roundtable discussion / Q&A / list episode where we try and come up, using the obscure Tuesday night draw rules, myself and my guests, we try and come up with the ultimate dream card of all time. There's more information. There's a link on my website, jimsmallman.com/TNJ. There's a link there to get tickets and to read more information and stuff like that. I'd love to see a load of you there. I've got a big old room that holds 400 people. I'm not expecting to fill it, but my God, if I did fill it, what a message that would send to the world of wrestling. I just think it'd be really cool. So if you're one of these people who loves listening to this podcast and you can get along to it, brilliant. If you can't get along to it but you love this podcast, then maybe tell someone who's in London or the South who could come along who might enjoy it, and I'd be super grateful. Once again, jimsmallman.com/TNJ. Right, to my top five heel runs of all time. At number five, I have him tattooed on my arm. It's Mick Foley. Now, Mick Foley as Cactus Jack in ECW did his anti-hardcore educating Tommy Dreamer gimmick that lasted I think probably from mid 95 to early 96 when he signed with WWE to become Mankind. During this time he records some of the best promos in the history of wrestling. The Kane Dewey promo, which you can see on YouTube, is absolutely astonishing and such a good promo that if you watch it knowing the context of it, in theory, depending on your outlook, Cactus Jack is the babyface and Tommy Dreamer is the heel. I mean, obviously, Cactus Jack is the heel because of the context of that promo and the fact that he's rallying against the ECW fans and he's rallying against their bloodthirsty nature and hardcore wrestling and just wants to have an easy life and a good paycheck. But they're all kind of positive traits. And this is the key to being a great heel and having a great heel run like Mick Foley did in ECW at that time. Is if you're a heel, you need to believe what you're saying and 100% believe in what you are talking about. And that's what makes an effective heel. Someone who says what they're saying because that's what they believe. And in the case of Mick Foley at this time, he did. And if you read his books, a lot of what he was talking about at the time was genuine stuff that he felt. And he found it easy to get into character because he had all those emotions at the back of his head. The best bit about this heel run as well is he does... So he does the stuff with Tommy Dreamer. He does some comical stuff in there, like, you know, painting pictures of various WWF and WCW personalities' faces on T-shirts and then having them pulled over his head and being hit in the head and whatever. And, you know, but there's stories as well that I think Mick tells in one of his books about he's sending people out to sell T-shirts for him in a show in New York. And he was so unpopular on such a good run as a heel that the person he sent out to sell T-shirts came back into the locker room and said, no, they're going to kill me. Now that's heat. That's full on heat. Also during this time, he joined the stable, joined Raven's Nest, but managed to be strong enough heel on his own that he was part of that stable, but that's not what you remember from it. What you remember from it are these promos. And I don't even think Kane Dewey's the best promo. He does a promo that's quoted word for word in Have a Nice Day, where he's talking to a chair and you don't realise that Mick is talking to a chair and he's talking to a chair and you think he's talking to a woman, and it's tremendous. It's such a creative thing to do, and where that idea even came from, I don't know. Mick is a genius, and again, you know, Mick's someone I like a hell of a lot, and I think that whole run, the back end of ECW, and again, you can see nearly all of it on the network, so, you know, go and watch it. It's just absolutely stellar work. Brilliant stuff. Even managed to do comedy in that time as well, you know. And the best bit is there's a very definite point when this run ended, because it's his last ever match in ECW, where he does get cheered and manages to leave with the BWO singing New York, New York. I wish I'd been there for that. Genuinely wish I'd been there for that. It only makes me more excited about taking Progress to New York and meeting New York crowds, I think. So I know the match was in Philly, but, you know, it's just, it's that whole Northeast sort of vibe. Just I'm super excited to be going there. Shame we can't go to Philly, really, but, you know, never know. One day, eh? Okay, number four on my favourite heel runs of all time. It might be a little bit high up for this. You might have expected it to be a bit further down, but it's my personal list, so, you know, I'm allowed to do what I want to do. And it's the original NWO. Now, I have got a very clear point of how long I think this is the greatest, one of the greatest heel runs of all time. Okay, so it's the end of May, beginning of June 1996. Scott Hall, Kevin Nash debut on Nitro, WCW. At the time, teased like they were still working for WWE. Brilliant. Bash at the Beach, 1996. Hogan joins. Absolutely mind-blowing. Now, I didn't watch this at the time. I wasn't watching WCW in 1996. So, I wasn't aware of this at the time. The first time I was aware that Hulk Hogan was a heel was when I bought WCW NWO Revenge. because that's when I started getting back into wrestling. In 1996, I wasn't massively into wrestling. I was 18 years old and I was drunk. So I remember watching this on video, a Best of Bash of the Beach videotape that I got from HMV in Leicester. And I remember seeing how the heel turn, and I knew the heel turn had happened. I remember seeing how it went down and going, oh, that's pretty sweet. Then the next few months, the NWO is unbelievably hot. Tremendous. Absolutely brilliant angle. If you don't know how the NWO angle came about, Eric Bischoff's idea, he'd seen how, I believe it was UWFI, had invaded New Japan. And he thought there was something in it, and decided to have an invading outside force, which is what NWO became. And everything to do with how they were set up and how they were perceived and shown on television, everything. Brilliant. Absolute genius. Tremendous. But I think most people agree with me, there's a point where it stopped being as exciting. And that point was when everybody joined the NWO. You know, I think the point up until six, so up until Sean Waltman joined, and Sean Waltman I would include in this, because he was quite a shocking one, because obviously he was so sort of tied in with WWE. So Sean Waltman joining, awesome. Up until that point, awesome. Properly tremendous. Do you know the next person to join after six was? It was Vincent, so it was Virgil. There's a definite, you know, no disrespect to Virgil, I met him in Orlando, he's a nice dude, but there's a definite drop-off in star power from one point to another. And I know calling him Vincent is a rib on Vincent, whatever, but... And then, not long after that, the Giant gets kicked out after not being in there particularly long and starting poor Big Show's quest to be face heel every few months in the late 90s. And then people like, and again, no disrespect to these guys, but people like VK Wall Street, so formerly known as IRS, Scott Norton, Big Bubba Rogers, they're the next people to join. It all of a sudden, it's not as special. And if I looked into this before, that's maybe 3 months into the angle and into the run. So up until that, it's so hot. And don't get me wrong, they still did great business for the next couple of years. But that was the... That's the bit that I look at and go, oh, that was groundbreaking. That was, as a heel run goes, was tremendous. And it was those first sort of 3-4 months of the NWO are just tremendous. Okay, number three. Probably less of a shock that I've chosen this one. And this is in 2005. Have you got it yet? From 2005? If you have, I'm impressed. It's CM Punk's Ring of Honor Summer of Punk. It's important to have that distinction because there's two Summer of Punks. We'll get to that in a second. So in May 2005, CM Punk has a WWE tryout. He has a match on Heat against Val Venus. He then signs a WWE contract early in June where it's going to go. I think he went to Ohio Valley Wrestling to get in tune with the WWE style. But even though he signed with WWE, He wins the Ring of Honor title after signing. Now, this is the point where a few people start being aware of what's happening in the world of wrestling, insider sort of knowledge. So he wins the Ring of Honor title, beating Austin Aries, and then starts saying to the fans and to the locker room and to the management of Ring of Honor, this title's mine now, I'm not defending it, I'm probably just gonna take it with me to WWE. And got so much heat. You know, even in a world where more and more people understand the behind the scenes working of wrestling, it got tons of heat. So much heat. I was aware of CM Punk, but this was the point that I went from being someone who admired his in-ring work to admiring everything about his character. He did eventually lose the title to James Gibson, or sort of Jamie Noble, if you might be how you know him, in a Four Corners match that also included Samoa Joe and Christopher Daniels, and a great match that is. But what's tremendous about this heel run is WWE used big elements of this in a babyface run for CM Punk in 2011. This is something obviously we've talked about on Tuesday Night Jaw quite a lot, is I absolutely adore CM Punk's 2011 run, from the pipe bomb to him winning the title to disappearing with the title. I think he came back a bit too early. Could have kept him gone for 6 months. It would have, you know, paid off it tremendously. But, you know, and that run was, he was a babyface in the eyes of a lot of fans, but in some fans he would have been a heel. His run in Ring of Honor in 2005, he was a heel. Trust me. Absolutely tremendous, tremendous run. If you can go back, you find a way to see it. Yeah, I think you can still certainly get various DVDs and stuff. I've got DVDs with it on, which pleases me. But yeah, do try and check that out, because it's a great, great run. Really, really good. Okay, that's my top two. What do you think the top two are? Okay. Now, number two is, in fact, both of my top two are stables. Spoiler alert. So at number two is Summer 2007. And my second favourite heel run of all time involves, in the main, it was a stable that had more people in it eventually, but the heel run that I really enjoy is three people. And in the main, one of them as the spokesperson, really. And that's the Age of the Fall. I'm really happy in that I've managed to tell two out of the four people who involved in this storyline. So the three people originally were in it, and the booker and writer that put it all together. I've managed to tell two out of the four people that this is one of my favourite. It's one of my favourite storylines and angles of all time. Absolutely no doubts about it whatsoever. It's certainly one of my favourite heel runs for one in particular wrestler, and also for the whole faction. So I've managed to tell Jimmy Jacobs, and I've managed to tell Gabe Sapolsky that I love the Age of the Fall. But Jimmy Jacobs in particular, this is, if you're looking for a great heel run, this is someone who's always a little guy, who was always, you know, moderately mid-card in Ring of Honor, and this made him, for a few months at least, a massive, massive star. And obviously, it also featured Necro Butcher, who I love dearly and think is fantastic, and Tyler Black, or the artist now known as Seth Rollins. And it's the way that this whole run was set up. It was using technology and using that sort of stuff, rather than it just being someone coming out and cutting a promo and going, hey, I don't like you, and then going completely opposite of what he's saying in order to get a really big heel response. They were using, they were posting on message boards and websites and stuff, alluding to something called Project 161, which was all to do with it being Ring of Honor's 161st show, and show coming up in Chicago, people thinking, who could it be? Jimmy Jacobs manages to make his return on the show, but then later in the show jumps the Briscoe brothers after a fantastic match, jumps the Briscoe brothers along with Tyler Black and Necro Butcher. Hang Jay Briscoe upside down, he's already bleeding. Jimmy Jacobs sits underneath him, gets covered in his blood, saying the Age of the Fall has begun and we're off to the races. And it's a tremendous, tremendous run. And it's always surprised me, really, that Jimmy Jacobs, you know, is now a writer for WWE, and is, you know, is a tremendously talented dude with a brilliant, brilliant mind. But when we did, I remember talking to Jimmy Havoc before we had his heel turn in progress, and I remember saying to him about the Age of the Fall and about how Jimmy Jacobs was, and I know it's something that Jimmy was aware of, and it's that thing of taking someone who is not, in the case of Jimmy Jacobs, not someone who's massively physically intimidating, but is insane. And that's what that whole storyline got across, and that's what that whole run was. And it led to, you know, the hottest run in singles of Jimmy Jacobs' career in Ring of Honor. That led to a tag team title run for Tyler Black and for Jimmy Jacobs, and it led to great things for Necro Butcher. But what a run the Age of the Fall was. And what I've chosen specifically is from summer 2007 to the turn of the year, to the beginning of 2008. Stable kept going until 2009. But I think the really great heel run is that initial 6 months. Just tremendous. So then, what is my favourite heel run of all time? Oh, I did say it was a stable. So I think you probably got it. And again, this is not something I watched live at the time. It's something I've gone back retrospectively and appreciated as someone who is not just a wrestling fan, but someone who is a writer and an executive producer and a booker. It's something that you just look at and go, hmm. And it's also probably the longest period of time that I'm going to choose out of this list in terms of a heel run. And that's the Four Horsemen between roughly 1985 and 1989, their first 4 years. During that time, they feuded with nearly everybody. In particular, they feuded with massive stars like Dusty Rhodes. They feuded with Sting. They feuded and then recruited Lex Luger and then feuded with him again. They feuded with Nikita Koloff. They feuded with Magnum TA. All great feuds. And everyone... I mentioned at the start of the show that I bet someone could choose their 10 favourite Ric Flair heel runs of all time, because he's had so many and he's been babyface and he's gone back to being heel. And you could probably pick 10 periods of Ric Flair's career where you could go, oh, isn't that brilliant? For me, and I love Ric Flair, I think he's great, but it's choosing the whole stable for this heel run. This is not something I knew until I did a bit of reading up on it. In 1985, up until that point, Ric Flair would often ally himself to Greg Valentine, who he'd been friends with for years, but Valentine went to WWE, so Flair needed someone else to kind of have as allies, so he had Ole and Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. And they were doing great stuff like breaking Dusty Rhodes' bones in a deserted car park. If you've never seen that footage, you look at that and go, it's not the most glamorous car park in the world. It's not even tarmacked. Everyone in the Horsemen feud, you know, all circling and feuding on one person. And the reason this is such an effective heel run is stables had always been a thing in wrestling, but this was the thing that really put stables on a map. This was the thing that made you realise if you get stables right, they can last for so long and be so impressive. You only have to look at the fact that in, you know, 98, 99, the Horsemen was still a thing. They weren't as good as this initial run, but they were still a thing. I think it's very easy to just say, oh, it's only this incarnation of the Horsemen. I don't think that's the case, because they survived Ole Anderson leaving, Lex Luger being in the Horsemen for a little bit and then being out of the Horsemen, Barry Windham turning on Lex Luger and joining the Horsemen. I think 1988, the lineup of Ric Flair, world champion, Barry Windham, US champion, and Arn and Tully, tag team champions, is the strongest lineup for me. I mean, if you want to tweet me at Jim Smallman what your favourite Horseman lineup is, that's mine. So I think that's tremendous. And it was only really Tully and Arn jumping to the WWF and JJ Dillon taking a backstage job there that really, and Wyndham kind of going there in 1989, that really, really sort of put an end to it. But you think up until that point, as heels, they ran roughshod over everybody. The way to make people want to tune into a TV program or buy a ticket is to see the Horsemen getting beat. If you wanted to put someone over as a babyface, you would have them be victorious over the Horsemen. And also, the Horsemen were so powerful as a heel stable and on such a strong run in those first sort of 3 to 4 years of being a heel stable, such a strong heel run, that they had to invent matches to contain them, like the War Games matches. That's how absolutely badass they were. So that for me is my favourite heel run of all time. So consistent through those years. There's no weak points in those initial 3 or 4 years of the original Four Horsemen. I just don't think there is. So they're my favourite heel runs of all time. Like I say, it's not just my favourite heels. I've tried to give you very specific sort of time periods just to make the list a bit more interesting. So, let me know yours. At Jim Smallman. Use the hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw. Maybe write me notes on your phone and then tweet them to me after you send the screenshot. That's probably the best way of doing it. And once again, plug a few things. Everything on the Distraction Pieces Network. Check it all out. Come to jimsmallman.com/TNJ. Point people at that to get people into the podcast. But also, there is a link there to come to the live podcast on Saturday, September the 9th at noon, King's Place in London for the London Podcast Festival. Tickets are £12.50. Come along to it. Tell people to come to it. I will have good guests. It will be a laugh. I promise. Okay, now this podcast today is a fairly low-key one, but, sometimes they have to be low-key ones. We've had a fair few great interviews recently. I've just had to have a rest this week and just put out a short one. So hopefully, though, it provokes a bit of debate. So if it does, let me know. Drop me a tweet. Obviously, check out everything to do with Progress as well. ProgressWrestling.com for tickets and merch. Demand-Progress.com for all of our shows. And also on my website soon, fingers crossed, I have finally got a t-shirt design for Tuesday Night Jaw. Oh yes. It's all to do with one of the rules that I talk about quite a lot. It's not the don't be a dick one, that's a progress rule, but a Tuesday Night Jaw thing I talk about quite a bit. So it's coming. The wonderful Rob Dobrovolsky, who designs all the Progress merch and all the graphics and stuff, he's done some good work for me, so you'll see it soon. Trust me, I'll tweet it as soon as I can. In the meantime, thanks for listening, guys. As always, I will be back next week with another episode of Tuesday Night Jaw Meets, and it's a good one, trust me. All right, I'll speak to you soon. Cheers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.